My name is Paula. A little background on me. I come from a very large and a very close-knit family of 10. Growing up, we attended church every Sunday, where it involved a lot of tradition and doing good deeds. For me, it was just something to check off the list. Although we did all the religious stuff, I never knew God. In reality, I was actually very afraid of him. I was never taught about a loving God. I lived with guilt, so I tried hard to be a very good person. When I was excommunicated for marrying outside the church, I happily walked away. I spent the next decade or more enjoying, or so I thought, the pleasures of life. Today, I still struggle being a fully devoted follower of Christ, but as 2 Corinthians 12, 9-10 declares, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong.'" I lost Michael, my husband, my business partner, and absolute best friend of 15 years, very suddenly and unexpectedly on June 6, 2004. We were at a huge benefit concert at the Cotton Bowl that was to take place over 3 days in early June called Crossroads Guitar Festival, put on by my all-time favorite performer, Eric Clapton. My older sister and her hubby, who flew in Friday, and our best couple friend were with us. I had planned this months earlier. On Saturday, Michael and I even went to the gym because he was a major workout fanatic and very devoted to running and weightlifting, and they were part of his daily routine, as being fit was always very important to him. We arrived early Sunday morning for the start of a 12-hour day of listening to some great music. Michael was extremely outgoing and had that never-met-a-stranger personality. All day long, he was up and down. He was not one to sit still. And every time he came back, he told me about his new friends, like the Dallas police officers who let him use all their facilities. He was also very funny and made me laugh. At approximately 9:45 that night, just before the big finale, when all the performers were to come on stage with Eric Clapton, Michael turned to me and said, "Give me a kiss. I have to go shower. I'm all sweaty." And I replied back, "Oh, no way. You are really sweaty." And he said, "No, please give me a kiss." So I did, and he said to me, "I love you. You're the best thing in my life." Then he jumped up and took off. These ended up being his last words to me. About 10:10, he wasn't back, so I called him. I got his voicemail, and I said, "Where are you? You're missing out. Hurry back." Another 10 minutes go by, and again, I got his voicemail, and he's nowhere. Now about 10:30, my phone rings, and it says unlisted number. I answer it, and a lady asks if I'm Paula Brown. I said, "Yes, who are you?" And she said, "I'm a nurse at Baylor Hospital." Now, for some reason, I blurted out, "Please give me your number, because if we get disconnected, I won't be able to get back with you." So she did. And then she asked me if I was married to Michael Brown. I said, "Yes, why? Is he okay?" And her reply was, "It is serious. You need to come to Baylor Hospital's ER right now." Looking back, she never said he is serious or anything about his condition, and that should have been a clue. But in my mind, I just knew he was dehydrated and probably passed out from the heat, and I told that over and over to my sister. I grabbed all my stuff and left with my sister and her husband. The other couple we were with was walking around, and they had the car, and so we were without transportation. And by now, the concert was getting over, so it was really hard to flag down a cab. Had I known Baylor was only 4 blocks away, I would have run there. But we got out, and we raced to the ER. We got a cab. When I walked in, I told them who I was, and I was told to wait. But I wanted to go see Michael now. After about 5 minutes of waiting, I look at Kelly, my sister, and said, "Something isn't right. They're making me wait too long." Just then, a nurse comes walking through the swinging doors asking for me. I walked to her, and I said, "Is he okay?" She gave me a faint smile and turned and said, "Please come in this room with me." I looked up, and over the door, it said, "Family room." I immediately yelled, "No, I know why you're wanting me to go in there. I won't go." She looked at me with tears in her eyes and said, "I'm so sorry." And this is when I totally lost it. I jumped up and down, and I was screaming, "No, no, I want to go see him." I simply would not believe what she was telling me. My sister shrieked and just broke down, and after a few minutes, I was told I had to go in that room because I was making too much noise, and they were running a business there. I walked in that room like a robot. I immediately was severely dehydrated, which is a sign of shock, and I plopped down in the chair. By then, our other couple friends made it, and there was silence. We were all in shock, but my brother-in-law had the awful responsibility of now contacting my family, most of which lived out of town. I was told he died of a massive heart attack. Based on his regimen and appearance, it was hard for me to digest, and he was only 48. I couldn't talk. I couldn't cry. I couldn't do anything. I wasn't allowed to go see him, although I begged so much, but my brother-in-law and his best friend did. They had to identify him, and they came out really white as ghost and promised me I would not want to see him. He had tubes in and out all over his body. And then some type of religious man, a minister, I suppose, walked in and asked if he could do anything for me. I didn't reply out loud to him, but in my head, I thought, what could he possibly do for me now? I couldn't even think to ask him to pray with me or for me. And I do not think I would have felt or even thought this or even cared had an important event in our lives not taken place just 4 months earlier. You see, Michael and I were together 15 years, but we lived in sin most of it. We lived together unmarried, and we partied hard on the weekends, and among other many ungodly things, mostly selfish, self-centered lives, but we're having the time of our lives, or so we thought. But in reality, it was really empty. And we both felt empty inside, and in 1999, we started asking questions, and we found a local church that we really enjoyed. Looking back, I see how God never abandoned me, even though I was a rebellious child. He was patiently waiting for me. As 2 Peter 3:9 states, the Lord isn't really being slow about his promise, as some people think. No, he is being patient for your sake. He does not want anyone to be destroyed, but he wants everyone to repent. It's like, wow, what a graceful and merciful God we have. And although we had been attending church since 1999, we still had one foot in the world, and it was only in 2004, when our church was one of thousands that was reading The Purpose-Driven Life, that Michael and I actually recognized and understood what it meant to be the sinners that we are, and that we repented and surrendered our lives to Christ. As Ephesians 2:8-9 says, God saved you by this grace when you believed, and you can't take credit for this. It is a gift from God. Salvation is not a reward for the good things we have done, so none of us can boast about it. My lifetime feelings of guilt were actually gone. And a feeling of calm suddenly came over me, and I said out loud to my sister, we just got saved in February, and Michael's in heaven. I was given all of Michael's personal items, and we left. On the way home, all I remember asking God in my head over and over, please, what do you want me to learn from this? What are you trying to show me? And the next 4 days were a blur. On Tuesday, which was also my birthday, I was writing his obituary. On Thursday, which was our wedding anniversary, I was having his funeral service. Yes, all the planning of the weekend was to celebrate my birthday and our wedding anniversary. I have to say it was the worst week of my life. And to be honest, because we were new in the Christian walk, I backslid a lot. We owned our own business, but had a partner on the administration side, and I walked away from it. But instead of taking care of myself emotionally, I threw myself into several church ministries and activities. I have learned since then that I was in major denial, and I simply did not want to accept it. Grief Share has taught me all the things I did wrong in the recovery process. I just wish I had started this earlier. Michael and I did everything together. I was not able to have children, so we were with each other 24/7. But walking into an empty home was absolutely gut-wrenching. The only thing that got me to open my door every day that I knew on the other side was the precious dog the two of us adopted just 2 months earlier. I would often thank God for this gift. Many days, my little buddy was the only thing that got me through each day. My family was supportive, but they lived in other states. It was a very long 10 weeks until I got the call from the coroner. He was as stunned as I was because he told me Michael was the perfect specimen, quote unquote, on the outside, but he had 80 and 90% blockage in his arteries to his heart. And he had told me if Michael had been a couch potato, he probably would have died years earlier. That actually brought me some comfort, although I was still very shocked. Again, he was only 48. I did thank God for giving me almost 15 years with Michael. I'm able to say I could thank God in my darkest moments, but I also said I backslid. I became very close with my bottle of wine. My daily routine was simple. I get up early, go work out, do errands, come home, nap for up to 4 hours, wake up and drink. And I was hiding all of this from my church friends. I was raised to pull up your bootstraps and no complaining, so I kept many of my feelings internal. And I'll be honest and tell you it took me 3 years before I faced my feelings. God has been and continues to be very patient with me. Once I did become honest with myself, I started to trust again and open up. And I realized I was angry. I was angry that at 50,000 people at a concert, one person dies and it was my husband. But I would never say that I was angry with God. I felt like I was too unworthy to question him and what he allowed to happen. When I came across GriefShare here at Watermark, I immediately wanted to get involved so I could help others, but not realizing I still needed help myself. I have since learned it's okay to cry, to grieve, to be angry, and even with all these feelings, know that God still loves me and will never forsake me. For me, my biggest takeaway from this class is that I can be happy again without guilt. I have a new normal, and that time does not heal all wounds, but the pain does lessen. Going through GriefShare provided me with other benefits also. How to serve the Lord and his people. I learned that God gave me a compassionate heart for others, a good listening ear, a desire to glorify him. And GriefShare is one way to use the gifts God has given me. Next year will be 15 years. Some days it feels like it all happened yesterday. I can happily say that I am remarried to a Christian man, but I can also say I still think about Michael and the future we could have had. I will never fully understand why God took him away from me and right when we were turning our lives around and getting closer to God. My favorite verse from the start of this to today, dealing with my loss, is Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord, your God, with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will set your path straight. Last and most importantly, my personal relationship with Jesus Christ grows deeper every day. I'm honored and privileged spending time that everyone has together here and that you all were courageous enough to come here. For those of you that are new here, I hope by now you have felt the love and compassion from your leaders and co-leaders. Paraphrasing Mark, it is great to see all of you here, but sad as to why we are all here. I pray that all of you lean into your grief and allow God to work through you as he did and continues to do for me. I know my life will never be the same, but I also know that I will see Michael again one day. Thank you.